F2. Number 18A.
That it is according to ordinances and principalities and powers, after the commandments of doctrines of men. You see, that's all the Adam, the counterfeit of principle, and so on. So here really he shows man as the idea of metaphysics, of divine metaphysics, of scientific metaphysics. Then he comes to life and gives a sense that man is always an exalted idea, exalted above a mortal sense of life. That however wonderful a man's life is, that life is not the divine life. Life is God. And the way of life is the divine way of life. The Christ man is always a risen man. And that man which rises, seek those things which are above. You see, that man, that's living the life of God. That because life says, I'm the way of life, and that way of life is a constructive sense of life. That way of life is a life where you always go upward and upward and upward in your consciousness. So here it is, exalting oneself. Set your affections on things above, not on things on the earth. Can you see again the exaltation of life? That within us which hungers for that exaltation, that is man. Yeah, so he puts off the old man with his deeds and shows the Adam man, the counterfeit of a sanctified life, and depicts the counterfeit of a sanctified life as fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil, covetousness, idolatry, and so on. Then as truth, he shows that man is the idea of truth, clothed with the whole garment of truth. If he is clothed with the whole garment of truth, then man is that which can only do right, or that which is doing right, doing truthful, that man. All the rest is not man. Put on, therefore, as the elect of God. Here he calls them as the elect of God. Says, put on, see, clothe yourself as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercy, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering, and above all things, put on charity, which is the bond of perfection. Whatever ye do, do it heartily as to the Lord, and not unto men. Don't be men pleasers, as he would say, with eye service, trying to please men. Try to please, as he says, the world and the Christ. Then in love, he just shows that man is that which cooperates in universal salvation. That everything within us which does not cooperate in universal salvation is not the true idea man. That which is too much concerned with a small circle is not man. We have a universal family, and therefore all our affection goes to the universe. And whatever restricts that is going against man. It's hard to say, but, you know, it's in metaphysics, either something is true or something is wrong. There is nothing in it which says it's hard or it's not so hard. In metaphysics, either something is right or something is wrong. And the idea of love is universality. So the idea of man is that which is universally minded. If we are not universally minded, we are not men. No matter how hard we try to be good in it, we are just not men. So he asks them to include all those that are without, and he just comforts universally. He's not limited nor restricted. So you begin to realize really what this firstborn of every creature, which he calls man, what the firstborn of every creature is, namely man. The firstborn of every creature is that which was born first. What is firstborn? The word God had an ideal, and God translated that ideal as the Christ to everyone, bringing out in everyone what? Man. The idea of God. That's the firstborn within ourselves. The later born is the Adam. The first man really isn't Adam, as Paul says, so, but at his time that was the concept of his universe. So the firstborn is really man as the idea of God in us. And Adam is then death through Christ in that consciousness. So he pictures and he shows man as the idea of God, as the perfect idea of God. Therefore, what is man? And through his seven subjects, he says, well, man is full of the knowledge of God. Mind. Then a spirit is the pure idea. He's holy, blameless, irreproachable. As the idea of soul, he's in possession of spiritual understanding. As the idea of principle, you see, he's a scientific idea, an idea of system and metaphysics. As life, he shows them he's an exalted idea above all mortality and above all mortal aims and means. And as truth, he shows that man really is active in the Christ truth. Is active and embodying and all that is truth about God and man. And in love, he is an idea of blessing the universe. He is a universal idea, an idea who universally, who is interested in a universal idea and not in a segregated concept. Now, we have another few minutes. Yes. Yes. So, let's take the law, because that law may interest you quite a bit, because everybody is interested in what is man. And to establish in consciousness the true idea man. So, let's see how we arrive at this true idea man. Well, if we have gone through, that's not in the law, if we have gone through the Word Triad and the Christ Triad, we have seen that the Christ dwells in us. So we can be one with that Christ man within us. So let's accept consciously that really we are one with the perfect idea man. That we can be one and must be one with the perfect idea man. Well, if we admit that to ourselves, then we have anything to do anymore with the mortal concept of man. So if we take the synonymous terms and know the ideas of synonymous terms, then we can sit down and say, all right, now, what is man? And we just can say, all right, now, let's admit to ourselves consciously that really the remnant is us. We can be one with the perfect idea man, you see. And so we can admit to ourselves that we are the idea of mind, that we are the idea of lawfulness, the idea of power, the idea of true origin, the idea of the parent mind, the idea of true creative ability, of the true creative faculty, that we are the idea of being the beginning of every true unfoldment, to be the idea of producing and ever producing a higher concept of life, that's mine. And that frees us from the belief that we have anything to do which is of the nature of mortal mind, of material beginning, of material creation, of human parenthood, of heredity or of anything of that sort. Or you take the spirit and you see that man is the idea of spirit. Well, what does it mean? It means that I have the right to accept my conscious unity to be the idea of spirit. Therefore, that I am the idea of order, that I am living and moving in the realm of unfoldment, of progress, of the fruits of spirit, of the infinite progress of spirit, that I am the idea of always developing spiritward and heavenward, that I am the idea of spiritual fruit, that I am that wonderful idea of spiritual unction, that I am the idea that constantly gives birth, that constantly brings forth, that constantly purifies itself. I am the idea of purity. Therefore, as an idea of purity, I am free from the other man. Therefore, I am completely separated from a fleshly man, from a material concept of man, from a physical concept of man. I am completely separated from the concept of having a material birth, of having a human birth, of having gone through a human unfoldment, through a material unfoldment, of having a material path that has nothing to do with me. And you see the Adam going, falling down, being buried in Christ. So you can go to soul and say, well, man is the idea of soul. And so I can accept my unity and admit to myself my unity to be the idea of soul. Therefore, as that idea of soul, my true identity is always happy, joyful, satisfied. It's an identity which always feels free and balanced, which never comes and goes, but which is, which is unchangeable, untouchable, cannot be injured, cannot fall. You see, it's an identity where I see that my manhood is what it is, a man's about, what is that saying? A man's what is what he is. Yeah, is what it is, a man's...
A man for all that?
A man's a man for all that, yes. Well, that's soul, you see. He just can't change what he is. He is what he is. He's so unchangeably identified that he can't be anything than what God made him to be. So, as the idea of man, I'm always united with that wonderful sense that my identity is immortal, that it cannot pass out, it's always resurrected above the mortal. Well, it's full of bliss, full of rejoicing, full of benediction and blessing of soul. That's the idea of man. And so I'm completely free from the Adam, from the old Adam, which says, I can, through my senses, see what I am. My senses tell what I am. They just can't. They just can't. They are just lying about me. So I'm not that which the sense testimony tells us what is, what nerves and pain and material joy and pleasure tell me what it is. It's just one lie. I'm not that. I'm just not that. So you can go to principle and you see, well, man is the idea of principle. Well, what does it mean? Therefore, I can admit to myself that really all that is true about me is that I am the idea about principle. Therefore, all that there is true about me is that I must admit to myself that I am an impersonal idea of principle. And it has nothing to do with the Adam, with my person. It has nothing to do how old I am, in what classification I am, if I am classified this way or that way humanly. I am just the idea of principle, and therefore I am the idea of science, I am the idea of system. Therefore, all what I do is that I live and move in the rhythm of system and of science and of metaphysics, where everything in my life is classified, individualized, where everything, every detail of my being just is related within the system of being to every other idea of being, and therefore where every idea of being within that system is helping me, loving me, supporting me, ministering me, and I'm ministering everyone other idea and loving it and supporting it and helping it, well, that's the idea of principle which is true about me. And therefore it has nothing whatever to do with the atom, the counterfeit of principle. Has nothing to do with material organization, with a material organism. I'm not made of a material organism, of a psychological system, nor of a physiological system. All other systems have nothing to do with me. And so you can go on to life and truth and love the way you like to do it. As long as you know the ideas of the synonymous term, and as long you stick to the elements of this law, then you are Colossian. Is that so? That's fine. Now we come to the first epistle to the Thessalonians. Now, it follows the epistle to the Colossians, and Colossians acquaints us with the fact that spiritually we have to accept the relationship with the perfect idea man. That is a true fact in being, that we can accept our conscious unity with the true idea man. And by accepting this wonderful oneness with the true idea man, we can no more be one with the false concept of man, with the mortal sense of man, with the Adam man. So you could ask yourself, well, is that not enough? Why should there be another epistle in regard to man's relationship with the perfect idea man? Is that not the climax, really, that we can be one with man as the perfect idea of God? That's exactly what the Thessalonians have thought. They have thought, well, that's quite enough. Paul has taught us that really man is the idea of God, perfect, fulfilled. So what more? What else? And they're very satisfied to know this new gospel. It's about the same subject where the Christian scientist is told when he comes into Christian science that man is the perfect idea of God. And he thinks that's wonderful, and so he says, all right, then man is the perfect idea of God. Fulfilled, complete. Well, this is true, and this is wrong, as every statement in science, according to what you think about it, according to how you look about it. It's true what Paul said in Colossians, but the Thessalonians made something wrong about that statement. They felt, if that is so let's just be jolly and happy and so on, and we don't have to care about anything, we can just behave and do what we like to do. Man is anyway perfect. Man is perfect, and so he's fulfilled. And anyway, the day of the Christ will come, and we will be in heaven and sit on the right hand of the throne of the God Almighty. So let's just our life, our inhuman life, let's just go. And so Paul had to write them a stern letter, and had to write to them and said, yes, you know, that's true, that man is the perfect idea of God, but you have to claim it in your daily life. You just can't let your daily life go on the way you like. But you have to make that which I taught you in Colossians, that you have to make your standard of life also in the human, or perhaps in spite of the human. So you can see now he asks them to be that true idea and that perfect idea also in human life, to claim it every day, to claim and base themselves always on that perfect idea of them. See, Jesus did the same. Jesus went through that very same process. At the beginning in Matthew we hear that when he was baptized, a voice from heaven said to him, "You are the Son of God." That's more or less what Paul tells the Colossians. He says, "You are the Son of God. You are the firstborn of God," he told them. But Jesus didn't leave it at that. When he saw that, then, after the baptism, he went into the wilderness. And in the wilderness, he had to claim that fact that he is the Son of God, in spite of all contradictory arguments of the devil in the temptation. And having met the claims of sin, he came back to Galilee and claimed that Son of Man, that the sonship with God, also in repudiating the claim of sickness and of death. In other words, there in human life, there in the world, on the plane of human, material, and physical life, he claimed that he was the Son of God. And he had to claim it. He just couldn't say, "All right, God has told me after baptism I am the Son of God, so I don't care about anything." No, he translated it to the human plane. And by translating it to the human plane, he was using the Christ of his true sonship. Can you see? Man, Christ. Man using the Christ. Christianity reflecting the Christ. That matrix is not so difficult as it seems to be. Huh? It's very, very simple. So he used that claim and claimed for himself that he was the Son of God. In other words, from the absolute standpoint, we are always the Son of God. Man is always the Son of God. That's Colossians. But we can't leave it at that. We have to make ourselves the Son of God. See, we have to make it in spite of opposing arguments. First, we always are the Son of God. And we never leave that high standard. We never fall away from that Son of God. But then the Christ comes and says, "Well, make yourself the Son of God." Jesus made himself the Son of God. The accusation against him was that Jesus made him the Son of God. And he did. Though, divinely first, he was the Son of God. And so this is what Paul is telling in 1 Thessalonians. He tells them, with all your might, claim that sonship with God and make yourself the Son of God in spite of everything that's going on the human plane of living. Then, by doing that, we are demonstrating really what the Bible, Mrs. Eddy, calls the Son of Man. See, the Son of Man is that expression in metaphysics which illustrates the ability to prove the Son of God in spite of the Adam. So it is the proving of the true idea of man as a divine spiritual superiority over the material plane of thought. That's the Son of Man. And so Ezekiel was always called, "Thou Son of Man," and Jesus called himself for a long time the Son of Man, until he began to see, "I still have to rise higher." And so he began to set his face towards Jerusalem, towards the claim of evil, and began to handle the claim of evil, and said, "The Son of Man must go." They wanted, the disciples of Jesus wanted to keep him back, and said, "Well, that's what you really is wonderful about you, Jesus, that you live here in the human and have dominion over the human and material. That's what we like." And so he refuted that and said, "You don't know what you're saying. The Son of Man has to go. He has to rise finally to that state where the Son of God is the Son of God, but proved as the Son of God, which he did with the resurrection and ascension." Jesus' aim was not to stay on this earth for millions of years and always prove that spirit is above matter, that spiritual power is above material power. He said, "That's the transitionary stage. That's the Christ stage. That's the Son of Man. But the Son of Man has to go." Within our thinking, we are touching this transition. We begin to see that the main point of Christian Science is not just to have a remedy for ills that pop up from time to time, but we begin to touch the purpose of Christian Science, namely to lead ourselves out of that stage of the Son of Man into the Son of God, where we prove that being is spiritual and only spiritual, and that is the aim of our life. So Paul asked the Thessalonians really to labor and to work with this concept of Colossians, really to labor in that spirit that man is the Son of God. He didn't say, "Well, you just have to believe and hold in faith the fact that you are the Son of God, and then day in and day out just do what you like to do. And just say, well, we know that Christ will come, and that at the second coming of Christ, we will all be lifted up into heaven, and we will all sit down on the throne of grace." He said, no, you can't do it that way. That's the promise, but that's not the method to work it out. It's only Colossians gives us the promise for our perfection. But in 1 Thessalonians, again, you have the A, B, namely the claiming of it, the using of it, you see. And so he says, well, work in that line, day in and day out. He asks them to labor and to earnestly strive in that conscious unity with the perfect idea man. He said he too came not in word only, but also in power. He said, "I didn't come only in the spirit of Colossians, where I gave you the promise, but I came to you also with power, with claiming that fact." He speaks of himself, of the labor of love and the patience of hope, which he shows. See, he was laboring in this idea, working in this idea. He said he did the preaching of the gospel with much contention.